If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Before we get into today's episode, I just wanted to share that we are opening up the garden gates to the Secret Gardens Outdoor Classroom, and we are going to be diving deep into the four types of gardens: the gardens that feed, the gardens that attract wildlife, the gardens as outdoor learning stations, and the gardens for art and beauty. In each of these four gardens, this is being recorded in the spring, I'm going to be showcasing my step-by-step process of how I am preparing the gardens for spring, and cannot wait to share that journey with you. So please join us for this Exploring Nature in Spring masterclass. This course is included in our Circle membership, so all of our members get access to this course as part of their subscription. So join us. I will leave more information in the show notes, but without further ado, I wanted to introduce Edwina Catino. She is an early childhood educator, and she's the founder of edlessons.com and is the host of the Blooming Curious podcast. Edwina is passionate about nurturing children's natural curiosity, and through her website, resources, and podcasts, she explores strategies that ensure children remain engaged and love learning. Edwina is on a mission to keep children engaged, questioning, and thinking, and is an advocate for play, nature pedagogy, and inquiry-based learner. Edwina dreams of a future where children can once again enjoy a carefree childhood which prioritizes outdoor play and learning through a lens of inquiry and exploration. This was one of my most favorite interviews. Edwina is just a delight to talk to, and I hope you enjoy this interview as much as I do. Without further ado, Edwina Catino.
Hello, everybody. We are here with Edwina from Ed's Lessons. She is also the podcast host of Blooming Curious Podcast. Welcome, Edwina.
Thank you so much, Victoria. It's a lovely being here with you.
Yes, all the way from Australia.
All the way from Perth, Australia. Yes, it is Wednesday morning here.
That's beautiful. So can you tell us to start a little bit about your story, your teaching background, and what led you to what you're doing now?
Oh, wow. Yes. Well, many moons ago, I started teaching as a high school language teacher, actually. And after some years, I left teaching and went into financial services industry, actually. And I've done lots of other things like been a freelance photographer, and then I had children. And when I had my children, that changed everything for me. And you realize when you're with your young children just how amazing it is to spend all their time together and what little sponges they are and how much they learned. And I just loved that whole process. And when they were when they started going to kindergarten and school, we were actually living in Dubai at the time, and they needed a kindergarten teacher. But I used to help out in the classroom a lot. So they used to say, oh, you're a teacher, right? And I go, well, yeah, but I'm a high school teacher. And they go, no, but you can teach. I said, so we'd love you to join our team. So I actually taught kindergarten in an international school for about 2 years. And when we moved to Australia, of course, I needed to get a proper qualification. So I went back to university full time as a mature age student and went and studied again as an early childhood educator. And obviously, it doesn't matter where you are in the world teaching, kids are all the same. And I learned a heck of a lot teaching internationally with just amazing international educators. And what we were doing, and it was an international IB school as well, so inquiry is very much part of what they do. But inquiry is also something that's very natural to me. I think I am just a curious person. I ask a lot of questions, which used to make teachers want to jump out of windows when I was a student in school. I am just a person who I guess doesn't accept the status quo, and I ask questions. And when I started teaching here, one of the things I realized was that, gosh, you know, these young kids, they are happiest when they're outdoors playing and when they find things that interest them. They really want to explore. They have that curiosity. But it's up to us as educators and parents as to how we, I guess, cultivate or nurture that curiosity. Because I realized very quickly that we are the driving force. That if a kid brings a snail on their hands, as they so often did to you, and you go, ooh, that's so slimy, put it down, go wash your hands. That's it. You're done. You've killed it. But if you say, oh my gosh, you know, how amazing, and look at that, and you know what that's called, and look at that little slime trail, and I wonder why the snail is slimy, and oh, what are those little things, and why is it going back into their shell? They suddenly, their eyes light up, and you suddenly just see this curiosity, and they want to know more. And so I thought, well, how do I take that into the classroom? And everybody's always so worried about the curriculum. And I thought, well, how do I just teach that and go with the kids and still meet these curriculum outcomes? And at that time, because I always believe that the universe sends you what you need. And it just so happened that Dr. Claire Warden was doing a 6-day workshop in Perth. It was like a miracle, right? And so I signed up and I did the course, and everything just fell into place. And I realized how easily it is for teachers, how we can very easily take what children love, their natural curiosity, and bring it into our classrooms in a way that we can still show their learning, that we can make their learning visible, and we can meet all these outcomes that administration and curriculum wants us to. So that's the long story short. Well, I don't know, maybe perhaps that is still long. But that's how I came to, I guess, just thinking, how can I keep these kids curious, and how can I take what they are interested in and bring it into the classroom?
And so was witnessing and being a part of Claire Warden's workshop or seminar, was that a pivotal moment for you? And what were some of the seeds of inspiration that you took, or nuggets that you took away from that?
Yeah, that was very pivotal for me. Also, because I am actually a hands-on person. I love working with my hands and making things. I'm kind of crafty. I'm always doing something. And everything related to the course with Claire Warden was hands-on. So, for example, if we were learning about forces, kids could make wind sculptures. You know, you're making. And so that's that whole side of the curriculum. Certainly that's about design and technologies. So, and I love that. And I realized very quickly that children love that too, because they learn by doing. They don't like sitting in a chair just being passive. They want to be active. It's in part of their natural DNA. It's how they function. It's how they learn. And so that whole part of the course about getting us educators to make things and see how we can take curriculum and actually make it hands-on for kids, that was really pivotal for me, because I realized, well, I can do all these things that I actually am really good at and that I really love, and work with kids in this way, and they really come alive with it. So why not go that way? And it worked out really well for me. Children were engaged. They loved coming to school. There were, you know, the tears that there are in the mornings right at the beginning of the year, they dry up very quickly when they know that they're going to be doing fun stuff, that it's not going to be all just sitting at desks with papers and worksheets. It's actually going to be fun. And I think that for me was instrumental in terms of changing the way that you learn to teach when you go to university, because there's not a heck of a lot there about inquiry. There's a little bit, which was wonderful. And that's always the part that made me excited, and it made me wake up and made me feel enthusiastic. And I think as educators, if you aren't enthusiastic, then you can't give that enthusiasm or expect children to be enthusiastic. So I think it's very much up to us as educators in terms of how do we model enthusiasm? How do we model curiosity? How do we model love learning? How do we model, you know, reading and loving reading just for the sheer pleasure of it? I think everything comes back very much to us and what we do. And if we can somehow find the things that make us happy and that we love doing, it really rubs off onto children.
Yeah. Incredible. Incredible. Yes. So with all this inquiry-based learning and all your seeds of inspiration that you have collected along the way, how would you, with our audience that's listening, a lot of folks that are listening are nature-based educators and they're working out in outdoor classrooms and nature programs. How would you use inquiry-based learning in the outdoors or in an outdoor classroom?
Great question. And I think for educators that are in a classroom, that is really difficult and it can be very frightening and very scary. But what I found was inquiry is not a separate subject. It's a state of mind. Mm. It's a stance. And it's not like, okay, you're going to do inquiry on a Monday afternoon from 12 till 3. That's not inquiry. Inquiry is, it's a mindset. It's everything. So when you're outdoors, and like an example of it, if a child, you know, we had an example was there was a tree in our outdoor area, and the children found these little crawly insects and these little bugs. And actually, I didn't even know what they were. And I thought I was, you know, quite cleaned up about nature. And I thought, what on earth are these little grubby things? I said, well, I don't know what they are, but gosh, how can we find out? And where can we find out? And I had a little inclination that it could be part of a life cycle. And lo and behold, it was. It was the ladybird's life cycle. And so great. So I just brought out the ladybird stuff and the books and a little wheel that I had about the life cycle and the floor book, because I'm a very big proponent of floor books, which again is something that was created by Dr. Claire Warden. And I got them involved with the questioning, the cycle. We got the larva, which was the larva stage actually. And we just kept an eye on this tree outside. And very soon the larva disappeared and it was full of ladybirds. So that's, I think you just take that life cycle and that learning outside to them. And so we recorded our learning in our floor books. And that then sparked more learning into other animals and perhaps their life cycles. And then, you know, that carried on. And the next thing we knew, we were making models of animals and their nests and where they lived and their cycles and whether they in fact did have a cycle or whether they just had live babies. And so, and then people think, well, yes, that is part of the curriculum, you know, and then you're bringing that vocabulary into your literacy sessions, and you're bringing those books, those nonfiction books about the animals into your literacy sessions, and you're using the vocabulary to teach your, when you're learning about syllables and the sounds, what does it sound like at the beginning of the word? You're bringing it all into your phonics and your sentence construction and everything. So it's not a standalone thing. I think it requires us just to have a little mindset change and to ask ourselves with everything that we're doing, how can I get kids to be curious about this? Mm. How can I get kids to question? How can I get kids to be interested? And I think once you've got that and it becomes just a natural, normal part of you, you'll be doing inquiry. It's not a separate thing. So I think a lot of time we worry, oh, I can't fit inquiry in. But actually, you probably already are. You just don't know it.
Yeah.
And it's then just a little bit of a tweak, get into a floor book, make the learning visible, integrated into your literacy. You can integrate it into math, you know, like we were doing planting and seeds. It was just before the school holidays, actually. And I said to the children, well, you know, we need to measure how much these, or how tall these plants, the beans have grown. So we used our little Unifix cubes and they took photographs of it and they said how tall it was. And after the holidays, we came back. I said, well, they've grown so much. Let's measure them again. So they did the Unifix cubes and they discovered, you know, there were three more. And we started talking about the difference. What is the difference? So that mathematical language. And then we started learning about the difference, for how to find the difference, and it's subtraction. So it's just little things like that. That is an inquiry. It's not something, you know, that's alien or weird. It's just part of life.
Yeah.
And so if you want kids to be questioning and curious, which I certainly do, I think there's not enough questioning in the world and not enough curiosity in the world, then you just have to start asking, how can I make this experience interesting for the children? I think it starts with those questions and it starts with just being enthusiastic yourself.
I love that. I love how you are describing it as a mindset and how we as adults and educators and parents need to model that behavior and really asking ourselves, what is our own mindset? Are we just kind of just going through life and the humdrum everything? Or are we captivating that curiosity and wonder? I love that. I just want to backpedal a little bit. Just for those that don't necessarily know what a floor book is, could you just describe what that is?
Yes. So a floor book is a very large sketchbook. So I think it's an A5 size actually would be ideal. If you can get one of those really big A5 size books, that's ideal. And the reason it's called a floor book is because it's on the floor. You put it on the floor and, you know, very often, you know how kids love lying down on their tummies, and that's exactly what they do. They just lie down and they're drawing, and perhaps depending on their age, they would be writing, labeling their drawings, making their observations. If they're still really like kindergarten, or as we call in Australia, is pre-primary, which is our first official year here in Western Australia, of school, you might be scribing. So you might be saying to them, so what did you tell me about this drawing? And then you would scribe for them. And so it's a way of making their learning, their thoughts, their ideas, making it visible. I guess it would be, in a way, equate to a learning wall. So some people have that learning wall up on in a classroom. You could do that, but you could also have the floor book. And the nice thing about the floor book is that it allows you as the educator or even a parent, I guess, especially if you're a homeschool parent, and it's a great way to record children's learning. If, you know, when you have your inspections or they come and have a look to see what you're doing, you don't have to have all those reams of paper. You can simply have a floor book where you can record children's learnings, their wanderings, their thoughts on things. And then what happens is, you as the educator, you obviously know where you want to take kids. And you can have a look at those comments that they've made or those wanderings that they've made in the book and think of, well, how can I take this into the curriculum? Mm. So if I just go back to this ladybird example, Claire Warden calls that a possible line of development or a plod. So you would think, well, actually, you know what? Life cycles and where animals live. And you would then mark that in the floor book as a possible line of development. And then you would introduce children by reading, through reading other books, perhaps watching a video, talking about other animals. You'd introduce that concept. And before you know it, you're onto a unit of work, perhaps, mm-hmm. that is part of your curriculum. And then as you're going through your floor book and children are writing more and you're meeting those outcomes, you will then put on the page where, for example, you've met that outcome, you'll date that and you'll say, well, this is the page. She's very specific in that every page of the floor book should have a number. So you should number your pages. And then you'll say, well, on page 38, I met this outcome and this is what the children have learned. And there you are. It's very, very quick in terms of, you know, you don't have to do reams of paperwork. You've met that outcome. You've logged it in the floor book. And if you are admin, do you want to come around and see where you've actually met your curriculum outcomes? Or if you're a homeschool parent and I don't know what those people are called that go around and have a look to check sometimes if, I don't know if they do that in the States, but I know in Australia for homeschool people, they've got these, I don't know, adjudicator. No, it's not an adjudicator. It's anyway, some kind of inspector that comes around to make sure that you're teaching your kids. And the evidence is there. You don't need, I don't think you need much more than that. So floor books are a wonderful way of giving children agency as well, because they can then, that floor book is theirs. It's not for you to make all pretty and beautiful and have everything in there perfect. And it's not yours. It's theirs. But you're using their wanderings and their thoughts to guide your teaching.
Can you use floor books with very, very young children? When do you start using a floor book?
I think for Claire Warden, I mean, she has her nature kindergarten, and I think she starts using them with really, 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 really small young children. For me, I started with my pre-primary or my kindergarten class, and they just, I should go and haul it out and show you. Perhaps I'll do something with that. But in the beginning, when they're still learning to write, you know, they could write, they might, you know, the L for the ladybird, maybe there's a B in it somewhere, maybe there's a D in it. And also what that teaches you as the educator is you start seeing exactly what they know and what they don't know, where you need to take them, right? And what you still need to fill in and what they're missing in terms of maybe their phonological awareness or in their literacy. So a floor book is a very valuable tool. It teaches you a lot, not just about what the kids are thinking about, what they're wondering about, but also their gaps in their literacy or even in their numeracy. And I think you can start at any age and you can scribe for children if they can't write yet. And for the older children, they certainly can do their own recording. So that's not a problem at all. I think it's just being aware of, so what did you do here? So tell me about this drawing. And then you just go off and you scribe. And you tell also, floor books also really great because you take a lot of photographs of what the kids are doing. And then you put the photograph in the floor book, which again is evidence of learning. And then you will annotate beside the photograph what this learning experience was, what you were doing, what the kids, what they were doing, what they got out of it, perhaps where you want to take them, perhaps areas where they still need to expand and learn more, or areas where they've really met outcomes and they've done really well and they need to be pushed and taken a little bit further now. So it's a really lovely tool to be able to give kids agency, but also help you as an educator to know where to take kids and how much they know and how much they still need to go.
I just think it's perfect for inquiry-based learning, especially for outdoors. And I tried it with my older group. I have a Secret Gardens. It was an after-school group. So they were mostly kindergartners. And what I would do is, I don't know if I was doing it right, but I would write a question of the day. What do you know about spiders? And so then they would just draw or write or whatever they could do. I hadn't done it so much with the younger ones. That's why I wanted to get your insight on that. But I think it's such a wonderful way to, as what you were saying, really tap into that wonder and curiosity and grow that muscle and that mindset. I think that's, are there other tools that you have used that really tap into pulling out that inquiry and wonder outdoors?
I think the most important tool is just questions. Mm. I think that's your most important strategy for inquiry is asking questions. And questions, you know, are really, really tricky because you have to make sure that they're also open-ended questions. You want questions that are going to get kids to explore more. Not a question like, you know, how many legs does a beetle have? Well, six. Do you think that this would be, how do you think that beetles grow and change? Mm. You know, that would be a much broader question that will need investigation, right? Mm-hmm. And I think apart from the floor book, which I see as a tool to collect children's thinking and wondering and also planning, it is a planning tool essentially. You're collecting, you're making your learning visible, but it's also a planning tool. Apart from that, I think questions are incredibly important because, as you said, you didn't know if you were using the book correctly. I don't know if there is a correct way to use anything like that. Inquiry is so organic, right? And mm-hmm. an inquiry is, it starts with questions. So you putting a question in a book or even asking a question, that's where it all starts. So I think questions are very valuable. And you know what? I think apart from that, you and I, we are the most valuable resource or tool when it comes to inquiry. I think it's us. It comes down to us and our mindset and how enthusiastic we are. And I had a little girl once that said to me, Mrs. Coutinho, you know, no offense, but you are the most enthusiastic teacher I've ever known. I said, don't worry about it. No offense taken. I think I'm a bit of a loon. I probably am, but you know, that's just how it is. Oh
but that's funny. that energy and that enthusiasm. I think what you were saying in the beginning, which is modeling that curiosity and that wonder and just the way we go through life is that we want our children to be lifelong learners and that we need to become first the experience and being those lifelong learners. So what is it that we are? I just had a conversation with someone when they were talking about risk and that we need to put ourselves through various risky situations. Can you tell us a little bit about Ed's lessons and your startup of your incredible podcast called Blooming Curious?
Gosh, incredible. I didn't realize that, Victoria. Thank you for that compliment.
Yes.
Lessons, where did it start? It started with my frustration, really. You know, when you're an educator and there's very few of you that have a certain pedagogy, like inquiry-based learning, for example, or whatever it might be, sometimes that can be really, really lonely when it's only you doing that or just you and a few colleagues. And sometimes you really need, we all do, don't we, as humans, you need someone to say to you, you're doing a great job. And also what happened was I realized with this massive influx of homeschooling that's happened since COVID, watching social media, how many parents were struggling and mm-hmm. thinking, well, how do I start this? Is my kid too young? Where do I get a curriculum? And so I thought, well, why not use what I know? Because a lot of teachers would come to me and say, how do I do this? How do I start inquiry? How do I use a floor book? How do you do this? And I thought to myself, well, if people are coming to me and asking me that, is that something perhaps that I could share and help others? And so I thought, well, I'm going to start this blog, which was Ed's Lessons, which actually had nothing to do with my name, although there was, I thought it was more like educational lessons. It was really a long word, but just so happened to be Ed, which is, I guess, short for Edwina as well.
Yeah.
But so I thought, well, I would share what I do with others. In the last 2 years, my role as an educator changed a little bit, and I went out of my early childhood classroom and became a specialist teacher. And many of my colleagues were saying, oh, my gosh, you're crazy. You should go back because, you know, you were making such a massive difference in so many children's lives. And I thought, well, that's true, but perhaps I can make a greater difference in more children's lives by having this blog and now the podcast. So I thought if I could get other educators, parents, because to me, you know, in Reggio, they say the parent is the first educator. Mm-hmm. So whenever I use that word educator, I hope that every single parent out there sees themselves as an educator, because you are.
Oh my God,
you are your child's first educator.
I say, you
know,
the same
it's
thing.
Not, you know, it's not that your kid's at home and then you drop them off at school and then that becomes someone else's job. No, your children are your job. First and foremost, you are the first educator, and then the teacher, and then the environment. So the environment is the third teacher, right? So I thought I could take all of this, put it into a blog and a podcast, and hopefully spread the good news, so to speak, and get more people on board to keep our kids curious, because too often I've seen that glaze over children's eyes, especially when I went out of my own classroom and was traveling around different classrooms. And you see those kids that just sit, and I want to say, like, wake up.
Yeah.
What is inside there? Come on. This is life. What are you thinking? What are you wondering? What would you like to know? And I realized that so many kids have switched off. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, also what you're getting is a lot of kids are saying, just give me the work. Just give me, what am I supposed to do so that I can just regurgitate this on a worksheet or in an assessment? And I don't think that's what learning is about. Mm-hmm. I think learning is about developing yourself and becoming a lifelong learner, being curious, asking questions, and wanting to find out more. And so I'm on a mission to keep kids curious. And I think that inquiry is the way to do it, because it forces kids to think about questions and not just to want you to top up their brains and put the information in and then they think they know it. They don't know it. They need to think about it. And so I think that's my mission, and I hope that I can reach more people, and I hope that I can make a difference in the lives of more children, because we definitely need, especially in this day and age, we need more curiosity.
Yeah, absolutely. Exclamation point.
And, you know, just going on that, many, many, many years ago, before I came to Australia, and we've been here 11 years now, I saw that video of Dr. Ken, the late Dr. Ken Robinson. He's just an amazing educator from the UK. And there's this video, and it's still going around to this day. It's really old now, but he talks about schools killing children's killing children's creativity. And that was always in the back of my mind. And I thought, actually, you know what? I wonder if school didn't kill my creativity. Mm. And I think as educators, we mean so well, but in giving kids everything on a plate, we do kill their curiosity and their creativity. And I think we need to do less and expect kids to do more. We need to let them experience hardship. And when I say hardship and struggle, I don't mean it in a very negative way, but they need to go through that process of finding answers, of investigation, of reading, of watching and listening and talking to people, of interviewing, all those things, how we gather information, and not just sit there and want us to just give them everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's the other part, is that, you know, there's two parts to this thing. One is that they're not curious anymore, especially as they go through. They start off really, really curious, but I think it's our job to nurture that curiosity and keep them curious. And by the time they get to high school, they've basically checked out, right? And so we've got to keep that desire to learn in children so that they can go through their high school as curious individuals, and they can come out there at the other end and be the creators and the problem solvers and the coders, because that's what we need in our world now. We need people like that. We need problem solvers. But you're not going to get a problem solver if you're just sitting there waiting for someone to top you up.
Right.
And so I think it's really important that we find ways to encourage children to ask questions, and we then help them to find the answers, not give them the answers, help them to find the answers.
Right. Exactly. I couldn't have said it any better.
Thank you.
Beautiful. It's beautiful. It's like a sermon. It's like, yeah, amen.
Oh, yeah, but maybe I sermon too much. I think I need to get off the little soapbox.
No, you know? I think it's so important. And you hit the nail on the head is that our children are, and I think society, it's everything's so quick. I think they're on the computer or this, everything, the toys are flashing. It's very, very quick. And if we just could pause and have them sit out in nature and just observe and go at a slower pace.
Oh, I was just going to say, in my role, as I mentioned, changed. And so I was doing sort of specialist 3 to 6 health. And one of the things I used to do very, very regularly with the children is just take them outside into we had a nature sort of area, and get them to do transient art just with elements from nature. And I also interview children and ask them how they felt. And being in nature, and I'm sure you've also Richard Liu's book, the nature, all about the nature deficit disorder and how children are losing their connection to nature. And so we're seeing all this depression and anxiety because children are being run ragged. And it's not just them going to school and having all this, but then they've got homework, for goodness sake. I don't even know why we have homework. There should be nothing except reading for pleasure, especially in, I think, elementary school, and especially in early childhood. That's the only thing they should be doing, reading for pleasure. And then they run ragged with extracurricular activities. And then we wonder why these children can't sit still, and we wonder why they can't focus, and we wonder why they have no interest in learning, and we wonder why there's nothing there, because they've lost their grounding, their connection to nature. And I think that I'm such a strong proponent as well for play. You think about how much, or rather how little time children get to play during the day. Now, I had a podcast episode, perhaps 2 or 3 episodes back, where I actually was talking about play and the importance of play in child development, in not only their physical development, but in their emotional, their cognitive development too. And we're depriving children of this basic right. This is their basic right to be a child, to learn and to play and actually being out in nature, I think, is an intrinsic right for every person, and especially for children. And they're being deprived of it. And it just makes me wonder how, as educators, we know all this stuff about how important play is, but then we take it away. You only have 30 minutes to play. What? And all because we're tied, I think, to the timetable. And then the timetable is tied to how many hours government or the Department of Education says that children have to have contact time in front of their teacher. And so, you know, it all just filters down. And as it filters down, children are the only ones actually that are deprived of it. So we're all so well-meaning in terms of what we want children to achieve, but yet we take away the one thing that they desperately need, and that is just to be themselves, to be kids, to play.
Yeah. So if you were to give one tip to an educator, which includes our parents, what would that be in reference to inquiry-based learning outdoors?
Be brave. Just be brave. Who cares? You know, the curriculum just tells you what you have to cover. Doesn't tell you how to cover it. And I think just be brave. Just go with kids. Go with what you know in your gut is the right thing to do. Because if you're an educator, children and their needs come first.
Yeah.
And if we look at children and their needs, we will do the right thing. We need to focus less on what we want to do for ourselves, and more on what is right for children. So just be brave. And it doesn't matter if you're brave. It doesn't matter if you're a little bit loony. It doesn't matter because, you know, it helps, actually. It really helps if you're a little bit of a nutcase. It helps if you're a little bit crazy. It helps if you really don't care what other people think. It helps if you believe in yourself and what you're doing and just go for it. And if you have that flaw book and you have evidence, nobody can tell you you're not doing your job. So you have evidence of the children's learning. And so you can tell people to go away because you're doing your job. And are children happy? Bottom line, are children happy coming to school? Are they happy being in your space? Are they happy to learn? And if they are, you're doing a great job. Give yourself a pat on the back and keep doing it.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you. Where can we find you in all the different places?
Wow. Well, you can find me on the Google. You can just Google edslessons.com, E-D-S, it's all one word, edslessons.com. I have the website and the blog there. You can find me on Instagram, edslessons, and on Facebook as edslessons. And you can find me on podcasting at Blooming Curious, and that's where I'd love you to be. Come and listen to me on my soapbox every week, preaching to the converted. So let's get a few more in. Yeah, so you can find
Wonderful.
Me there.
Any last comments that you'd like to share with our community?
Victoria, I have been listening to your podcast in the car, and I would just like to say what an amazing job you're doing. And in fact, what you've done is confused me because I'm thinking, oh, so I've now decided that my niche is inquiry because that's what I do. But my niche, my other love is also, you know, this whole outdoor thing and planting gardens and getting kids outside and cooking and all this kind of stuff. And I'm thinking, gosh, how am I going to fit that in as well? So I would just like to thank you for everything you do. And I think it's amazing. And we just need to keep plugging away. And hopefully we'll convert more people to doing it the right way. Because in life, as I've taught my children, there's only two paths. There's the hard way and the easy way. And the easy way is never the right way. There's no quick fix. You got to do the hard yards. So take the hard path and do the right thing.
Well said. Well said. Thank you for your kind words. We became quick friends. Giggling and laughing over the pond. So I want to thank you for that. And I'm looking forward to our growing friendship over the years and comparing notes and getting the word out there.
And I'm looking forward to hearing everything that you're doing. And thank you. And I love your new thing about what is it you're doing, a garden. You're changing things up with Waldorf, is it?
We have an upcoming workshop.
Waldorf, yeah. And I'm loving that. And I'm carrying on, and I'm just started a series on the podcast where I'm going to be focusing on curiosity. Curiosity is always there, but I'm focusing more on the inquiry now and how to get into inquiry and how to get this inquiry mindset going. So if there's listeners who are listening and they want to know how to get more curious about inquiry and how to integrate it into everything you do, it's in your every cell of your body, and I hope to see you over at Blooming Curious. Thank you, Victoria, for having me today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us here at the Outdoor Classrooms podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with anybody who you think would enjoy it and follow us on Instagram. We'd love to continue the conversation. If you want to continue the conversation even deeper, please join us in the Circle community. The purpose of the Circle is to support, guide, and push you as you continually grow and sustain your outdoor classroom by providing the tools to help you set the right goals, then actually follow through in achieving those goals with the support of our amazing community. Each month, 24/7, you get guidance and support from myself. You get to begin your journey with our new member roadmap. You get access to our outdoor teaching bootcamp. You get to interact and learn from guest experts who are on our podcast. They come into our membership and join us to continue the conversation. meditations. You get to connect and collaborate during 2 live sessions a month. You get access to all our online workshops and masterclasses. You get to dig deeper with our membership missions each month, and you get to become an ambassador of joy for children. I hope you can join us. You get all of this. You get to become a member of our family at Outdoor Classroom. So I hope you can join us. I will share the link in the show notes, and we'll see you later. Come join us.